Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Monday, August 29th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free, thanks to the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, and it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. If you click the link, download it, you can print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on it, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It also contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often because primarily it tends to improve the quality of people's lives when they use these tools. And secondarily, it tends to promote comments, questions, answers, or testimonials. And if you have any of that to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. And we appreciate when people do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. Our intention with this work is to be of service, and that's far easier to do when you let us know. How is this landing on you, with you, and in you? What might be of assistance in terms of clarifying how or when to use which tool, since the Reality Management Worksheet is one of a variety of tools that Michael and Jeannie offer. Area code 843, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Yes, my name is Micah, and I'm calling from South Carolina.
Welcome, Michael. How can we support you today?
Well, I've only recently run across your show. I have listened, very minute little bits here and there, usually before, strangely, something will interrupt me in my regular life to where I have to take my attention away. But what I refer to as concessions, I've been able, now that I'm almost 50 years old, I've been able to make many concessions in my life, especially when, though I do not try and put my religious feelings upon another. I have to intertwine that, as just a few years ago, I had my personal experience.
Are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, I heard I had my personal experience, and then it cut out.
Okay, my apologies. I had my personal experience where I came to know in my personal truth that for me, God is very real and he's pretty awesome. I won't go into detail with that, but from that time forward, I began reflecting on all the times I didn't know there was a spiritual being of omnipotent power that was watching over me my entire life. And of course, I began reflecting on things that I thought was just pure luck. But upon doing that, I also had to reflect on other things where I had done wrong and I had wrong done unto me. And it was at that point that I felt a natural wave over me of overall committed forgiveness. And it was easy. It became a second nature, and it felt powerful, but not to the point where I was forgiving these wrongs that had been done throughout my life, but accepting them for things that had occurred. And with that being said, I basically, the one that I've actually had a problem with, and to the point where, yes, I'm a pretty smart individual, but I'm smart enough to know that I don't know everything. But the one that really gets me is just it's really hard to, now that I am very well aware of some of the clinical studies that was done upon me and also my mother, that these things, they brought a dark chapter to my memory, and it's one that I almost feel an uncontrollable rage for what was done. And it's one of the hardest points that I think I've ever encountered with trying to commit a forgiveness and move on from it.
Okay, so let
and
me
I think, go ahead,
let
sir.
Me interrupt you and support you with what we talk about in this work as a definition for forgiveness. We're not talking about pardoning somebody or letting them off the hook. We're not moving past it as though it never happened. What we're doing with forgiveness in this work, as Michael Rice has come to know it from the ancient Aramaic and the study of the translation of the oldest known copy of the New Testament directly into English from the Comboros manuscript and the committee mm-hmm. of translators that were working with that, the word forgiveness in the Aramaic was shabag, and it meant to cancel or dismantle. And so in this work, it's got nothing to do with pardoning. It has to do with canceling and dismantling the perceptions we have created about the flow of life. And it is almost identical to what the Course in Miracles talks about, where it says, you know, put away everything you think you want, your trifling treasures put away, leave a clean and open space in your mind for the Christ mind to come. And in the Way of Mastery, in the third lesson, where it says, forgiveness is the dismantling of the false perceptions you have projected upon another. So this is not about forgetting, forgiving, letting somebody off the hook. It means mm-hmm. going into your own perceptual framework and understanding that when you perceive somebody did something wrong to you, and therefore it means you're in pain or fear or sadness because of what they did, that is a false perception. And when you're relating to that days, weeks, months, years, or even decades later, it's not happening in that moment anywhere but in your own mind. So any pain, any fear, any sadness that you're generating is not from that past event. It's from the machinations in your own mind. And what this work leads us to observe for ourselves is, how is it that I'm creating the anger, the fear, the sadness, the hurt, the bitterness, the resentment? And what do I need to do to quit creating that so I don't have to keep experiencing it over and over again?
Wow. And that's excellent why, formulation. I'm very much onto that.
And that's why the Reality Management Worksheet has the first three steps has me specifying what I'm doing with my conscious logical mind, because that is what's going to create my emotions and my bitterness and my resentment and my emotional pain. And then it has me cancel the goal that my mind is holding, what needs to happen, what should have happened in the past, etc., and ask to be shown the hidden part of my own mind that's actually creating my upset. Have you done a worksheet process before? Has anybody helped you step through that? Do you know what that is about?
Honestly, I've strayed away from those things due to the attempt back in the 1980s to get me to do such a thing, and some of the things it drew out. Well,
now are you
let's
talking
just say
about
they,
with, are you talking about with this very work?
With this work that you're referring to, no, but it pretty much put a stigma on me for worksheets. This is at a time when I was go ahead. My apologies.
So the idea here is that the worksheet process has no magic in it, but the understanding of what I'm doing with my mind energy to create my own upset, that has magic in it. That has the power in it. So whether you don't need a worksheet. You can do it with a breath. You can do it with the EFT tapping. You can do it with Byron Katie's work, where she understands that you only suffer when you believe your negative thoughts. You can do it with Diedrich Wolzak's six-step forgiveness process, where you go in and understand what it is you made these events in the past mean about you, because it's the meaning you carry about them that's creating your upset and nothing else. So, you know, if you have a stigma about the worksheets, this might sound silly, but we've had this quite often in the past 19 years or so of my doing support groups for this. People frequently have to do worksheets about how they hate worksheets. And they can unravel how they're creating such a powerfully negative internal experience about an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper with some words on it. I mean, how and they think the worksheet is making them upset. Well, how can a piece of paper with words on it create emotions inside of you? It's not possible. What happens inside of you is created inside of you. And whether you look at Michael Singer's work, or you look at Byron Katie's work, or Diedrich Wolzak's work, or Dr. Michael Rice's work, or Guy Finley's work, all of these people have studied in different traditions that all have the same fundamental observation. We are creating our experience of life inside of us. And we're doing that with the choice of the focus of our conscious awareness in each moment. And if the worksheet can help you access that and release the process that's going on in you that still has you generating negative emotions about things that happened in your past, great. If it isn't helping do that, then find another approach, because the dynamic is happening inside of you and it is accessible. It is possible for you to learn and develop the skill for managing what your mind is doing to create any negative emotion that you experience.
Wow. That, you know, honestly, you've given a lot of second thought to that process that actually some very much some clarity that I believe may have broke down a little stigma wall that was set up close to four decades ago. I might have to give that a try. And... Well, actually, I kind of feel that would be a good idea.
I have a history of doing therapy with people that extends over 48 years, and this mm-hmm. particular process is one of the most, if not the most, powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible process I've ever encountered. And I say accessible because it's offered on the internet absolutely free. It's not even, mm-hmm. give us your email address so we can put you on our mailing list, and then we'll give it to you. It's just there. Click the link, download
that,
it, print it off,
and
copy it as often as you like, and use it over and over again.
And that would be on whyagain.org, correct?
That is on whyagain.org. And if the worksheet that's there is a little bit more, too many words and intimidating, you can go to the mindshiftersacademy.org website and click on the educational materials page, and there's a 5-step mental short version there and a forgiveness pattern mm-hmm. there. And that, again, these are things where you don't even need to add an email address and get put on a mailing list. You click the link and get access to the material. And
okay.
there are at this point, well more than a dozen audio files of shows where people have actually been stepped through the worksheet process. So if you don't want to do one right now in the internet show, and you don't want to put your personal stuff out there, and you don't have a support group by you, you can still use those files as a tutorial for how
mm-hmm.
to get the most out of these worksheets.
Okay. Wow. I will definitely, toward possibly either during this or toward the end, I will definitely go to one of those two sites and make use of that. I'm actually kind of feeling compelled to now. And not by any direction from you, by something deep within me that it feels like it's almost trying to reach to the surface and breathe.
Well, we also have support groups that happen on Tuesday and Thursday that are available through Zoom, and those are also available free. And that's 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time, and on a routine basis, we have people who will do a worksheet process. We'll listen to an hour or more of either watch a video or an audio file of one of our favorite teachers, and then it's common for people to then do a worksheet. And so that's
mm-hmm.
another option that's available.
Well, and I'll tell you, one thing that really charmed me about your show is definitely what you had stated about the earliest transition from Aramaic into the English language. That's something that myself, I have had a small calling and almost an interest in it that is uncanny that I have to feed with learning. And throughout those years, at least the last 30 years with my adult mind, well, as close to an adult as I'll ever be, it's something that I sought. I didn't just take the first version, and I came to understand discrepancies and inconsistencies were not necessarily a bad thing, but for me, it was something that triggered me wanting to see not necessarily where they got it wrong to go, hey, you're wrong, because I felt more that it would lead me to learning other things that could be very beneficial. Big fan of Melchizedek, by the way. That is one of the names that I came to know through a lot of the ancient scripts that I've had the opportunity to be privy to. And also the correlation and, a great majority of the New Testament as well. So I tell you, it is something that I feel, I feel more reassured that, of course, with none of us humanly being there in those ancient days when so many amazing things were occurring in this world for the transition that is seemingly coming to fruition in our lifetime or possibly that of our children, that those were amazing times with a wisdom that should be unfettered. At least that's my personal take on it.
All right. Well, is there something specifically related to this, either the way of mastery work that we're doing this year or the worksheet process, that I can answer a question for you on or offer clarification?
Actually, it would be more to the, if possible, you could give me a little bit of insight on something that would be in the psychologist field. And that would be something that, just a brief background. I was institutionalized for depression when I was very young at the Medical University of South Carolina. I went there for depression, and they ended up putting me on something that I'm sure you would hear of, and this may give you a cringe. They put me on Novain. And I had a extreme allergic reaction to it that caused the most painful spasms of my life. And then they had to wean me off of it, and that was done. But see, that also goes into the chapter of, I discovered that when my mother was at that same institution in 1967 for depression with the same exact doctor that I had in 1987. She was one of the first rounds of the brand new drug Novain as well. And it's something that I had no clue what it was prescribed for, but I was told that I should tell any medical physician if I have any allergies to make sure that I made them aware that I was allergic to that drug. And I got a lot of eyebrows raised and a lot of people that really didn't believe they prescribed that to me for depression. And then finally, in the age of the internet, when I looked it up, well, sir, I'm pretty sure you're familiar with the drug, so I don't have to go into the details of what it is prescribed for, but it scared me. It scared me because I'll just leave it at it scared me, and it's had me questioning things ever since. But,
okay, so let's help you with that right here. In this work, When people say, it scared me, we understand that has never happened, that what generates fear in me is what I make something mean, what I think it means about me or somebody else. It's an internal process. So to program my mind to say, oh, this thing from the outside is causing my emotion, then all I need to do is keep saying, it scared me, or you make me angry, or you're hurting my feelings. But if I want to program my mind to observe more accurately, then I can say something like, wow, when I learned that, I generated a lot of fear. I poured a lot of my mental energy into the thoughts, like, this means maybe I'm crazy, or there's something really bad or wrong with me, or I'll never recover. And if I pour my mind energy into those thoughts, I will generate a lot of fear.
Mm-hmm.
In the next moment, if I pour a lot of my mind energy into those, you know, thoughts like, those bastards, I can't believe they would do that, I can generate a lot of anger. If I pour a lot of mind energy into thoughts like, wow, I just don't get it. How could they do that? That's not what it was prescribed for. This doesn't make any sense. I can generate a lot of confusion. And with each of these, as I'm living my life with eyes wide open observing, I understand I'm the one who's generated each of those three emotions we just talked about from the very same situation, but it's determined by which thoughts I pour my mind energy into. It's not determined by the outside event.
I understand that.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Not trying to schmooze you in any way, but that was a very articulate way that related to what I was actually never having words to formulate for it.
So to begin, you know, I tell people, I used to think I had a really bad memory. And as a result, I took and I paid for and I went to seminars and I read books about improving my memory. And at least 6, maybe 8 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of those courses had, they either quoted this research or they had replicated this research. I'm going to tell you about this research. For instance, the very best memory course I ever took, the guy's name was now if right now in this moment I say, oh, I can't remember, statistically significantly more often I will not remember. But if in this mm-hmm. very moment when I can see a picture in my mind's eye of his face on the back cover of the book, but I can't retrieve the name right now, if I say it'll come to me and breathe and soften and either go on in the conversation or take a breath and wait for it to come, statistically significantly more often, it will come to me. What is going on there? This is something people have observed empirically for a lot of years now. Well, here's mm-hmm. what we think happens. Here's what we think is going on. There is a part of my brain that actually listens to what I say. As weird as that sounds, I program my mind to operate and believe by the thoughts that I pour my mind energy into and by the words that I speak, even if I don't speak them out loud. Michael mm-hmm. Rice calls this regulatory speech. And regulatory speech has two aspects. One of them is, as I think and speak, I regulate what the processes of my mind are. If I keep saying things like, it scared me, he made me angry, she's making me fearful, this one's causing me a lot of grief. If I keep saying that, I'm programming my mind to believe that people and things and situations outside of me cause my emotions. And then I start to live with the experience of that because it's what I programmed my mind to believe. So that's the programming or the regulating aspect of regulatory speech, as Michael Rice talks about it. There's also a revelatory aspect. My speech, my thought patterns will reveal to me what I truly believe. So we have people who come to the support group and they learn about observing the process of what's causing emotions and they learn about the worksheets. And they give great lip service to the fact that they know that they cause their own emotions, et cetera. And then they get triggered to upset and they say, oh, this guy's really making me mad. And in that moment, their speech has revealed to them that there is a part of their unconscious mind that still firmly believes people and things outside of them create their emotions. And rather than just change the words, that's a good first step, change the words, but to really make progress in this, I would want to do worksheets or journaling to uncover what is that part of my mind that's still resisting, that's going back to an old, well-rehearsed pattern of belief. And I want to mm-hmm. uncover it and dismantle it. Because if my eyes are open and I'm living with full direct observation in the moment and I realize I create my emotions by how and where I pour my mind energy in the moment, then I don't want to keep programming myself to believe that I'm a victim of people and things around me creating my emotions. So every time it gets revealed by my speech that there's a part of my mind that still thinks that way or is still repeating that old, well-rehearsed pattern of thought, I want to correct it in my speech in the moment and say something like, oh, when that happened, I generated a lot of fear or a lot of anger. And then mm-hmm. I want to go do a worksheet or a journaling session or a breath session about that part of my mind that still has been so well trained to view myself as a victim and dismantle it.
Amazing, sir. Absolutely amazing. I would dare say if I were a little bit more attuned to my spiritual side, which it grows every day, I would dare say that God led me to this program today just to receive that input.
Well, it's just the tip. It's not even the tip of the iceberg. It is a snowflake on the tip of the iceberg, because what's mm-hmm. available in the last 11 and a half years of this internet shows, programs, what's available even in just the highlight shows over the last 11 and a half years, what's available, with Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, now they've gotten some since the coronavirus restrictions have kicked in. They've got some programs you can go through online. You don't even have to wait until the next mm-hmm. time they have an in-person intensive. And you can get even more expertise, more practice, more insight into how to directly use this set of tools. There's more than just the one tool. To dismantle your upsets and to step into that greater and greater liberty to realize all of the ways that you're creating your experience of life moment to moment, whether it's in the Course in Miracles lessons or as we're talking about in the Way of Mastery. We keep coming back to the Way of Mastery in the fifth lesson. The fifth page in the first lesson says, nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. And that goes directly against what most of us from the Western mindset have been taught to think about ourselves and life and the cause of our emotions, etc. And mm-hmm. Michael and Jeannie Rice will make available not just the app on the phone, but the worksheets, a wide range of them that can be downloaded. There's the Mind Goal Management Sheets. There's it comes from the lecture, Getting the Stress You Need, and the idea of the Mind Shifter Targeted Journaling Tool. There's the mm-hmm. Three Early Memories of Conflict worksheet that you can do. There's the Codependence to Interdependence worksheet that you can do. Just a host of tools, and the how to apply them is available either on the internet show like we're talking now or from the archives.
Mm-hmm.
So if you feel like this was, you know, divine inspiration to get you here, maybe you'll feel like divine inspiration is guiding you to actually pick up the tools and do some work and see what that might open up for you in the realm of liberation of your own personal experience, putting you in the driver's seat, so to speak, for the emotions and perceptions that you are creating actively day in and day out.
You know, after your description of this, I actually have, most people would not jump to any conclusion, but I feel very confident that I quite well have manifested, you know, through my own perception of things, this anger, this, I dare say it feels not necessarily such as more forgiveness, that's just the word that seems closest to the relativity of it, but that I want to know how to move on from it, and I kind of hold it against myself, even though I have what I refer to as CCR, which is Command Cognitive Retainment. I can cognitively tell you times and dates all the way back to the 70s of certain interactions in which I was a part of. I playfully say I have a selective photographic memory, usually for things that seem minuscule to others, but to me it means a lot because it gives me accuracy in my personal data. And to allude to something that you had said, I actually have to think of some words that were it goes like this. It was the emptiness. I forgot how it went. But it was actually part of the Tao of Jeet Kune Do written by Bruce Lee. Perfect emptiness, yet therein something moves, following its own course. Those were the words. And what I relate to that is, you know, when you question something like you had, you know, alluded to loosely, and you can't think of it, like the picture on the back of the book, but you can't think of the name. Am I correct in saying that just in a, you know, probably a week or two, while you're having a middle of a conversation of something unrelated, your subconscious gets back to you and gives you the answer out of nowhere? That's because in my personal belief and my own experience with my own mind, that is your subconscious, if you would refer to it as that, that's actually been doing all this digging and all this work and trying to raise their hand to get your attention to give you the answer you sought from within.
Well, you know, there's all kinds of different ways to talk about this. One of the things that I find myself saying frequently on this show is that we're just using words, which are symbols of symbols, and we're using them to talk about things that go way beyond words each new heartbeat. So, mm-hmm. You know, Paramahansa Yogananda used to say there is no such thing as the unconscious. There's only your consciousness. There's that which you're willing to see and that which you're hiding from yourself. So, yeah, I can see in my mind's eye the picture on the back cover of the book. I can see this guy's face. I could describe him to you. You know, dark hair, clean shaven, glasses. But if the name won't come to me, it doesn't mean it's not there. Right? But if I tell my mind I can't remember, I'm programming my mind. There's a part of my mind that actually listens to what I say. Well, so mm-hmm. What is that? Is it the subconscious? Is it the unconscious? These are just words. And what we're inviting people to do in this work is put the intellectual mind, the conscious logical mind, and the words, put them aside. Come up to the worksheet process and use the first three steps of the worksheet process to figure out what it is you're doing with your thoughts to create your negative emotion and your negative internal state, and what your conscious logical mind tells you has to happen. What is the goal that you're holding on to that's not happening? What your conscious logical mind is telling you has to happen before you can have peace or feel good or get restored to love or whatever. And then, after you've mapped that out and put that on, then you literally throw it away. You literally cancel the goal. You say, listen, my conscious logical mind has been working on this problem for days, weeks, months, years, or decades, and I still get mm-hmm. angry or upset or scared every time I think about it. So let me put all of that stuff that it's doing and has been spinning and churning on for years or decades, let me put that aside. Breathe and soften and ask to be shown something else. Open myself to tap into an intuitive, a creative, an otherworldly, you know, a guide from beyond. It doesn't really matter how you conceptualize it.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to clear the space of the intellectual mind and all the thoughts and step into the practice of canceling everything you think you want, your trifling treasures put away. And the more you practice doing that, the more you practice getting your conscious logical mind to observe that it is the source of your pain, not the solution to it, that's when it can slow down, when it finally starts to realize that it is simply a tool, a very simple tool to be picked up and applied to how do I get home from here? What do I need to do to get to the meeting on time? That's where the conscious logical mind is a useful tool. But in resolving my upsets, my sadness, my fear, my bitterness, my hurt, my anger, my grief, my resentment, that tool will only produce more of what it's always produced. So in the worksheet process, we put it all aside, wipe the slate clean, and practice putting ourselves in that open, allowing space where insight and creativity and an entirely different perspective on ourselves and our situation and the source of what's causing our upset can fill the void. And we breathe and we soften and we understand every time we do that, we live in the experience that I just changed. My internal emotional state changed and nothing changed outside of me. My history didn't change. That person is still over there calling me a bad name. This person is still 2 hours late for my meeting. This person still has $30,000 they owe me and they haven't paid. But I'm internally in an entirely different space. And every time I do a worksheet or a forgiveness process like that, a goal canceling, a perception dismantling process like that, I live the experience that, I was creating this all along because I'm feeling different internally and nothing has changed in my past or in the present moment external circumstance. Wow, maybe I have been doing this creating my own life experience that all these great teachings have been telling us for centuries.
Well, I tell you what, it's one thing I cannot deny, something that's always been very plain to me and I've always been receptive to is when I see something like that on paper and all the vast little tangents and different facets of the directions it can go, when you finally commit and put it to paper in any form. I know I've used that in other ways. When I was younger, I would write some of the most dark, depressing poetry, but when I was done and I read it, it was a release of all that energy. And I never forgot that, so suffice to say I wrote quite a bit, but it was not stuff I shared with other people. It was literally, as you said, with the worksheet. Just threw it away afterwards. Because every one of them were committed to memory. I didn't need it on paper. So I would only think that I'm actually quite eager to get this worksheet now. I'm feeling very positive on it, and I'm going to give it a shot.
All right. Well, there will be people here either for the second hour today or us the rest of the week in this first hour. I'd be happy to support you if you have questions or comments with that. And again, you can get it through your app store if you type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, or you can get it as a worksheet that you can download, the full-blown seven-step worksheet process off of whyagain.org, the five-step mental short version that I use to introduce people to this in my private practice is available on the mindshiftersacademy.org website on the educational materials page. And on that page, there's also the forgiveness patter that I do. And it's in a PDF form, and it's also now in an audio file form, where you can just hit the play button and you'll have my voice giving a version of the forgiveness patter, which is similar to I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need for anyone or anything to change, including myself. I put my conscious logical mind on the shelf for now, and I ask to be shown the hidden part of my own mind that's actually creating this upset. And then it goes on talking about being open and receptive and trusting that whatever comes to mind is perfectly safe. So all of that's available absolutely free, and I hope you feel free to keep us posted if there's something we can do to support you in applying those tools in your life.
Sir, I most definitely will, and I thank you very much for the time you've given me. I very much do, and I will keep you up to date on this.
All right. Well, you're very welcome and deserving, and I will mute you so you can listen in and or you can drop off and pursue that actually applying the worksheets and keep us posted. So we have about 15 minutes left. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1 like Michael did, we can have a conversation. What's on your mind? What strikes you about what Michael was just discussing? What comments or questions do you have about the first 19 lessons of the Way of Mastery, which we've been going through so slowly and methodically since January 10th. We have 14 minutes left and plenty of time to entertain a comment or a question or clarification about the review. Right. We have been with only two exceptions, we've read through the Way of Mastery lessons at least twice each with deliberateness and with review and with commentary. And we've had people who've listened and said, you know, I think I'm going to make a practice of going through the Way of Mastery, and every time there's an indented quotation, I'm going to copy that out or print that out, and I'm going to use that as my review for the course lesson, and or I'm going to use it as a mantra or a meditation. And that is a wonderful idea. I've had a couple people who've tried that and said it's really useful. The point of this work is to help us directly observe what's actually going on that creates our experience of life. How much of that is under our control? I remember we hit one lesson where there were what I would call koans. These are these contradictory statements that makes the mind race. And one of them is, mastery arises from innocence. And we had a Western mind that says, you know, you really have to work hard and put your nose to the grindstone, and that's the way to mastery. And this book says, the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect, and mastery arises from innocence. What you decree is, for you, you're creating, just like we're talking about with Michael, the whole point of, if I tell myself I can't remember, I probably will not remember. And if I tell myself it will come to me, then when it does, roll around, in what you might call the Rolodex of my mind, and it comes to the surface, my mind will say, oh, hey, Tim, here's that thing you wanted to remember. And so because I thought and spoke about remembering it and being able to remember it and how it will come to me, my regulatory speech primed the pump and gave me access to that information when it came back to the surface, to the conscious awareness. So 563-999-3581. Any comments about what Michael was saying? Any comments about the Way of Mastery, the first 19 lessons? Any questions or comments about the interview with Dale Allen Hoffman that was played on Friday? Let us know. How can we support you with the last 10 minutes that we have in this show? The Way of Mastery has been guiding us through learning to observe how we are creating our own emotions, learning to observe how we create our own perception, learning that the forgiveness process means to release another from the perceptions we have been projecting upon them. And when you do that clearly enough, over a long enough period of time, you wake up and realize how absolutely thoroughly we have been creating and coloring our relationships with others. People have never done anything to us that we didn't perceive them doing. One of my favorite stories about that comes from Jeannie Rice, where she was talking about she was in a group and she had a pattern of getting very agitated if she perceived that someone was disrespecting her or not listening to her, especially if it was a man. And she did some worksheets and some work for probably several years. And then she was in a group, and there was a young woman in the group who came up to her at the break and said, "I can't believe that guy. Can you believe what that guy did?" And Jeannie was completely oblivious. She said, "What do you mean? What do you mean what he did?" And the young woman said, "Well, he asked you a question, and then you went to answer him, and he just turned away and completely ignored you." And Jeannie was shocked, because that's exactly the kind of behavior that she used to use to generate all kinds of upset. And clearly she'd done enough work on it so that this time she didn't even notice that the man was ignoring her as she was answering his question. So it's about what I perceive that creates my experience of life and nothing else. So people do things, and if I perceive it as offensive, I create offense, which is why I came to the statement a few years ago. I said, please don't take offense, even if it's offered. Even if somebody comes up to you and their intention is to get you riled up, to make you feel bad about yourself, to, you know, insult you, to disrespect you, even if that's their intention, please don't take offense. Because it's completely an internal thing when you do. Area code 541, you're in the air.
Linda here, and I just wanted to make two brief statements. One is, it is so nice to fall into the way of the heart after living for as long as I've lived, being forced into the shoe of the way of the intellect, and to be supported in what I felt when I was very tiny, and to find that that is indeed closer to the one than anything I ever tried in the intellect. So thank you so much for that, and Michael and Jeannie. And also the second thing is I want to thank you for helping me melt my resistance to the worksheets. Every time you talk about them, it seems like a new facet about them is revealed to me through your words. And I see them as more and more powerful, not as a necessary thing to do, but as something I feel I can use to my further growth. And thank you.
Well, you're entirely welcome and far more deserving than you yet know.
These two shows are a delight.
All right. Blessings.
Blessings.
I will mute you and turn on 760. You're in the air.
Hi, this is Anne. That was good to hear, too, Celinda, because I agree with the worksheet thing. So what came to me when you were saying, sharing Jeannie's story, because I've heard that before, and it's like that is powerful. So I'm realizing this is happening with something that I used to do to myself. And when I would drop something or it didn't go the way that I thought, you know, something was going to go, it seems to be a lot of things that happen in the kitchen. And I used to get on myself because, oh, well, you know, call myself names or say, well, that was stupid, or why did you do that? Or well, and now it's like you were saying with Jeannie's thing, I look at it as it's on the floor and it's a mess, and I go, oh, well, look at that. And it just goes, and it's like, whoa, it's just so freeing. Anyway, so, yeah, things that we do ourselves as well. Anyway, thanks and blessings.
Well, you're very welcome and deserving, and I will mute you so you can listen to the second hour. We have Jeannie Rice is on the switchboard. I don't know if she's available yet to come forward, but I'll just put this on the recording that apparently last week, as we were trying to make the recordings available, either I hit the wrong button once or twice, or some of the Aramaicisms, part one, part two, part three, part four, are mislabeled. So, just for future reference, you might want to re-listen to those and figure out if they're actually... So I know that for the fourth day, Friday, I hit part three, but people said that was part two. So somewhere in there, the labeling might need to be cleared up. And then we did play the interview with Dale Hoffman on Friday.
Awesome.
So welcome back.
Thank you so much.
I hope you were rested and rejuvenated, and that you have a lovely show today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Blessings.
Bye. So, welcome everybody to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Monday, August the 29th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to dial in, I'll just say we had a nice little brunch this morning with Urathe and Tom. They are on their way back home and coming through from Asheville, going up to Cincinnati. And they stopped by here, and we had a lovely time together. So that was really nice, spending time with them and showing them our garden and sharing breakfast, lunch, whatever. And they just left a few minutes ago, heading up the road, so we wish them safe travels. And we enjoyed our time last week. Apologies for the mix-up on the audio, so I will definitely check into that. But hope you enjoyed listening to Michael and Dale talk about the Aramaic terms and how the translations have really gotten, whether on purpose or by accident. And so knowing the true meanings of the words that were taught helps us to understand and be able to do our work better. And just as an example, the core tool is forgiveness, and it's not about letting the other person off of the hook for whatever's going on inside of you. If you, me, whoever, is experiencing upset, then forgiveness is about going inside and removing our upset so that no matter what happens in our world, we can stay connected to our source. I use the example oftentimes of the disciples were in a boat and there was a storm raging, and I was trying to read at the same time as I was talking. My apologies. Diane said she enjoyed listening to Dr. Tim and Michael and Dale's recordings last week. Well, we are glad you're participating. I was just getting ready to use the example, though, that so the disciples are in a boat and there's this storm going on, and Peter says he sees Yeshua, Jesus, walking on water, and he says, I know if you tell me to step out that I can walk on water too. And so he's like, well, come on. So he steps out of the boat and is walking on water until he starts looking at his circumstance. And when he does that, he sinks. You know, we each can have a storm going on in our life, and it's up to us whether we sink or whether we walk water. The storm didn't change. The winds were still blowing, and the waves were still raging, and everything was still going on the way it had been before, depending on where his focus was, whether he walked on top or whether he sank. So I just use that as an illustration, and welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted to be back with you. After a week of playtime on the beach, it was an awesome vacation, our first one in 5 years, without any agenda, and we just got lazy and had two desserts a day and had a great time. It was a fun week. And delighted to be back to move forward with this conversation. We just had a visit from Tom and Yarate from Cincinnati. They were traveling in this area, so came by and had brunch with us. And so it was a nice visit. We got some tips on gardening and gave a few tips on what we've learned about gardening. And so sweet to have people from all over the world that that we get to connect with and to play with. So anybody that's ever in the area of Bristol, Virginia, come visit. And beyond that, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
You do. You already have.
Well, I thought we would.
I believe it's Mr. Grady, 704. You're on the air.
Greetings, everyone. How you doing?
Hey, we're rocking. Welcome, young man.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Glad
Good
I could
to hear
be.
Your voice.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
Got to hear your voice.
It's
just
good to hear that you... Go ahead.
I was going to say that I got to hear your voice on the session that you did with some of the folks that are listening to the Hear My Voice book club. That was a sweet session that you did with them. So nice to hear the work is moving forward through your lips.
Well, it is through their effort and their willingness. And I must say that the folks that are in the group I'm working with are really very, very good people. They're very much focused and seem very willing to apply what needs to be in order to get to where they need to be, which is to establish active present love in their lives day in, day out, 24/7. And it's been a real trip for me because I had been away from doing any group work at all with this until probably 7 weeks ago when we started. So
tell me about your experience from your end.
In doing the group?
No, just from your perspective, what's it taken? How have things shifted for you? Is it teaching you anything to be back in alignment with people and putting the work forward?
Well, I would say absolutely yes. No question about that. I'm discovering new clarity, Michael, in some of the things that were taught that I believe that I knew and knew well. And I have discovered with working with these other people that they provide me an opportunity. They're providing me that opportunity to revisit some of these thoughts. And as a result, the clarity, and I think you call this building brain cells, has actually improved considerably. So it is doing them regularly and helping guiding other people through the process had been one of my fears in the past coming out of the work. Not feeling like I was ready and that sort of thing. But pardon my coughing here. I have simply taken a leap of faith, and it's turned out to be something very positive for me in that sense. And I found
well, I know
that
over
you,
the years. No, you go ahead. I'll hold my thought.
Well, simply that you had said when we were at the teacher training and Why Again and even at Laws of Living in those intensives that one thing that we should look for is that over time we would develop our own way of presenting the material. And I am indeed coming face to face with a good, comfortable feeling of how I would like to present the work and not simply attempt to be a mimic of your process and your steps. Now, I do follow the steps in the worksheets, but I'm willing to depart on sidetracks and having conversations about concepts that I believe need to be stressed a little bit in the early stages, for example, and There's a lot of neat things I'm finding, and it's becoming more comfortable for me. In fact, I just got off a two-hour conversation with one of the ladies in Europe, and we did a worksheet. Actually, we did your worksheet. You know how Yinka has several worksheets that she has developed, and we're migrating into your current worksheet. So today was my first foray into bridging from that level three up to the level four sheet, which is your sheet. So a lot of good opportunity. It took nearly 2 hours, but we got through it, and I learned a lot, and I continue to learn, which is good. I'll pause.
It's awesome to support somebody that, isn't it?
When looking at someone's face, when listening to the tone of their voice and excitement and or enthusiasm build after the first stages of the worksheet, which often tend to be a little bit more plodding, a little bit more working through the weeds and the confusion and maybe getting some clarity on, you know, the getting the story right, the object of attention, the ideas of the thoughts and feel. I was very surprised how many people struggle with feelings. I thought I was the only one. But, you know, getting these things nailed down a little bit better as you go through the sheet and then seeing them unfold in their enthusiasm and their vibrancy, see it change almost on a dime by the time we get into the second half of the worksheet, which is a more of a pursuit of embracing love more fully and more completely. That is an absolute joy, Michael. To your point, it's exactly why I feel like this is work that can be done with other people, and it's rewarding for me because the love they begin to discover and share tends to enhance the love that I feel and then share. So it's a shared experience, which is really neat. So I'll hold there and let you make your comment again here.
Well, I'm with you 100% on that. And you remind me of the first time that I got on the platform almost 50 years ago. Actually, it's a little better than 50 years ago. I had a friend who was teaching a class and asked me if I'd present 2 hours in their weekend workshop. And I approached that, knew everything I was going to say in the first hour that I taught, and I can remember being so embarrassed. If I hadn't committed to that second hour that particular weekend, I probably never would have gotten on the platform and never would have taught again. But I was committed to the second hour, and it was actually several years until I realized why my first hour of speaking was such a tragedy. It was such a mess. And that was that I knew exactly what my lesson was. That was exactly what I was going to present. I was extremely well-versed in it and could have done it with my eyes closed and asleep almost. However, I didn't realize at that point that I functioned intuitively. And I realized several years later that I was intuitively hearing the questions that my audience had and trying to answer them and trying to present what I was there to present. And it was just a mess. The next hour, I put my notes away and I presented, you know, the basic topic I was there to present, but in response to the questions the live audience had. And that's one of the reasons why I say to everybody who wants to take this work and teach it is, you're going to do your own unique thing because there's going to come a point where you're going to know exactly what that person's asking, and it relates to what you want to present, but it's not what you want to present. And if you're really functioning out of being, it's going to change every time you do it. And I've realized that over the years. There are no two "why is this happening to me again" workshops that I've done that are the same. And it's based on the energetic interaction between, you know, the audience. And every audience has got a different set of questions and therefore tends to go in a different answer. And if I'm really listening, then I'm going to follow their lead rather than A, B, C, I have this rote presentation that I have to do. So that was, you know, you remind me of my starting point with that. And, you know, to me, doing the worksheet with people is just so magical because of that moment where when they drop the perceptual construct that has so much pain in them and they purge whatever it is that they're ready to forgive at that moment and then return in that state of being, it's monumental to be part of that. The old idea of purgatory, you know, one of the things the worksheet does, I was just saying this to Yurati and Tom when they were visiting, one of the things the worksheet does is it leads people into purgatory. And people who go into purgatory don't have to live in hell. People who never go into purgatory end up creating their own hells. And the word purgatory means to purge. And we're opening the space for people to drop into this carbon-based memory system, clean out a chunk of gunk, whatever it is that's up that they're ready to expose to love and move through. And as people do that, they don't accumulate the traumas that cause people to live in this condition that's been called hell. So it's a noble undertaking for me.
Well, I think that I can definitely relate to what you're saying about changing from more of an intuitive approach. For me, I was much more rigid. I had notes all written out to the nth degree, and then right off the bat, I get a question that does not pertain to step one, you know, and it's like,
right,
doggone it, you know, that you're messing with my plan here, you know, and that's the
that was my first hour on the platform. It was such a disaster.
Wow.
So I relate
well,
to that
I'll
one.
Tell you, it's quite an experience, though, because we tend to have a free-flowing conversation in the group. The group I have is only seven on the one session that I do, sometimes eight. But they're always reminding me of they're all in different places. At the, you know, you need to present in a way. And this is why I like your comment about the intuitiveness of it. They may be asking a question that's present in everybody else at the same time, but they would ask it in a different way. So going with the flow is far more productive. And I had not realized how easy it is in this work to do so. I mean, to really just step into that active place of love. To stand in that when you're doing your work, in terms of facilitating or guiding others through it, is something I certainly hope will be conveyed. I mean, for me to be able to share with them, okay, it's all right to call time out in the middle of a worksheet. Just call time out. Let's have a conversation about a bigger other issue that's coming intuitively to me that I really think might be of value to you. And when we start talking about it, it's like the dam breaks. People are starting to open up and open, you know, and it just starts to flow again. So it's very neat the way this work lends itself to that particular experience and then that approach to follow through and express from. And to that point, I would like to point out that I texted you last Wednesday that it felt like I thought I was listening to you when you were doing your bi-month, your every other week conversation with the
Hear My Voice book show and books.
Hear
book
your,
club,
yeah, yeah. Yes. When, yeah. Yeah. And your present structure is to go through chapters of the book. And as I listened to them, Michael, honestly and truly felt like, sounded like, and I heard, and this could well be me hearing at a different level of consciousness, brain cells, if you will, that I had been in before, but hearing so differently. And it sounded to me like you were actually reading from a totally new book, a 2.0 version. I thought that was very interesting that you even said you thought you might consider rewriting some of it and maybe altering not the content per se, but the energy and the intuitive factors that you had spoken of earlier. So it came out very differently. It is your best presentation, and I've sat through many hours of you, okay, talking. Your conversation in the book club on Wednesday was very, very solid, very different, very uplifting. And I wanted to share my appreciation on and gratitude for that.
Delighted. And, you know, that brings another point forward, something that I've spoken to many people over the years who've done teacher training. There have been some people who've like, oh, great, I'm going to go on the road and I'm going to do Michael Rice. And it's like, no, you'll never do Michael Rice. There's only one of me. But you'll be a perfect you, whoever you are in presenting, and you're going to have to find your own path for presenting it. And then what I realized, and I would always advise people who really want to step in and teach this work, No, don't go on the road. It's too expensive, because here's what's going to happen. And I suspect you've probably noticed this in the weeks that you've been teaching it, is that you're going to draw people who are going to show you what you don't know yet. You'll draw people who will give you the opportunities to work through your issues. And when people try to do that on the road, it's too darn costly. I mean, you know, because it's not, doesn't produce the result that ultimately we want to produce. It's, you know, when the teacher needs to do their processing, and, you know, having gone through that for years and then watch people who like, okay, so I'm getting in my car and I'm going to go to this city and that city, just like you do. It's like, you can't afford to do that. Stay home where it's cheap, gather groups, and then what you need to learn, you'll draw people who will resonate exactly what your next issue is. Then once you've done a significant portion of your work, go on the road. Yeah, then it'll work. But you're not going to be able to do it and pay what it costs, you know, the expenses to be on the road. It's a tough way to go. I remember one particular center in Florida. You know, it's actually Unity in Palm Beach. And back in its heyday, they'd have 2,000 members on a Sunday, and I had my practice, and I lived in Boca Raton and in Fort Lauderdale, and I tried, you know, that was only an hour away, and I tried and tried to get into that center, and no matter what I did, the doors just wouldn't open. And then one day I get a phone call, and it's the person who leads Unity of Palm Beach is saying, hey, we're going to do a healing symposium, and we've heard your work, and we'd like you to come. So it's like, well, that was probably 5 years after I'd given up on ever getting to present there. And I realized once I was invited to speak there why I couldn't break in there earlier when I wanted to, and that was I wasn't prepared. I didn't know what I needed to know. I didn't have a presentation that would have, what should I say, moved forward effectively in that center. And then when I was invited, I was ready and could handle the energy that came at me and the things that needed to be dealt with. So I could see how that really unfolded. And, you know, I was quite glad that I hadn't, over that 5 year or so period, been able to open the door, because I realized that it would have been the last time I was invited there if I'd gone in once. Whereas when I finally did get to present, I was invited back several times to keynote different conferences and such that they had. So it's an interesting process.
Yes.
What you get to confront.
Well, actually, I wanted to ask you a question about
cool, great.
In the Enlightenment book, which, by the way, I have gone back through and reread again, and spent a lot of time with material in there. I wanted to ask you about and get your take on this. First John, the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 1. It says, at the very beginning, there was willed action, and the willed action was then by God, and that God was the willed action. And I guess having heard you speak many times, in the beginning was mind energy, so that's a little bit confusing. And I wondered if you would comment, not so much to say you're wrong, but I realize that's not the case, because the word for willed action is milta, M-I-L-T-A, and the word for mind energy, as best I can determine out of the glossary, is M-I-L-A, mila. So I'd be curious to know if you could comment about it. And then what impact does using willed action in that first thing, how does that impact the work as you have been teaching it?
Well, you perhaps haven't heard me speak this before. On occasion, it comes up this way, but I'll offer, and according to my understanding, there are two proper interpretations of the word milta there. One of them is willed action, and one of them is mind energy, that both are correct translations. So oftentimes, offer, and the translation that I usually use is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh, referring to the fact that if you go into the cell biologist laboratory, they'll tell you that when we think a thought, it produces an actual molecule in the body, or so-called body. That molecule circulates around until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches, and it lands on the cell, inserts itself in the cell, and if we were watching from inside of the cell, what we would see is that mind energy, as that neuropeptide, that molecule landed on the cell, we see it coming into the cell as chemistry, quite literally becoming what we call flesh or physiology. And that, so oftentimes when I present that, I'll say in the beginning was the mind energy or the willed action. And when you realize it, will is this faculty of the soul with which the faculty of will is designed to direct the mind. How does it direct the mind but with mind energy? So my best understanding is that both translations of the word milta are accurate, mind energy or willed action. And that if I'm going to, if I will, let's say, I'm really enjoying this conversation, I want to spend some time with you, I'm going to get in my car and come down this afternoon. That would all be that would be my will framing a goal for my mind to achieve. And how did I frame that goal? I framed it with mind energy. It took thought, that impetus to move in the direction of I'm going to get in the car and drive to the Carolinas and see you would enter into my physiology as mind energy. And then that mind energy, the functioning purpose of the mind, is out of its store of information, is to provide guidance with which to fulfill that goal that initiated from will and then became mind energy in my physiology. And so then a whole series of actions or behaviors would come from that goal. I might say, well, I need to go. Before I go, I need to grab the cooler. Let me see. I need to call and see if Grady's going to be available. I'll arrive there about 4 o'clock. I'm going to get a couple of drinks, a couple of glasses of water. Gene, would you mind making me a cup of tea? By the way, where are the keys? And let's see, what am I going to – so all the things that I need to do to complete that goal, that willed action – my mind is going to prompt me to do. If my perception is on track and fueled by love, if my goal came from being is connected to love, and my perception is fueled by Kuba, Rachman and Kuba are engaged, then everything that I need to do to accomplish that willed action, my mind is going to guide me to do, and I'm going to show up at 4 o'clock, and I won't be thirsty, and I'll maybe have had a snack because I grabbed some chips on the way out the door, and and we get to meet.
Mm-hmm.
Does that fit? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I acknowledge and actually can see, and it works for me to still use what you had in there before, that it's mind energy. What was really interesting to me is bringing in the concept of will in and of itself as an aspect of mind energy. Is it consciously done? Is will consciously applied, or can it be unconsciously applied? I mean,
well, there's no unconscious in the will or in being. The unconscious is part of the body-mind structure and
the
its storage system from the past. It's just information. And so, you know, when Yeshua says, if you want to practice his work, his tools, you've got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. I think we can safely assume most everybody he was talking to had what we call physical eyes and ears. It worked reasonably well. So he wasn't talking about that. He was saying you've got to have the brain cells. And once you build the brain cells, then your mind is going to guide you if it's connected. You know, when they said to him, well, if I want to carry out an action, you know, this is kind of the long form of the question they're saying to Yeshua, in all this stuff, you've taught me all this stuff, Yeshua, about the law and how it all works. In all of that, what's most important if I'm going to function as a human being? He said, you got to have Rachma active. You got to have this gateway open that allows will to function through the body-mind unit and direct behavior. And if that gateway is open, which allows love, your essential nature, to enter your human form, then your goals, by definition, because Rachma is active, are going to be keyed to love. The other two qualities of goals are those based in either hostility or fear, which would be negative goals or destructive goals. They're automatically excluded by Rachma being active. I source my behavior from being, from love. And then my mind, depending on how it's structured, if I'm stuck in what the ancients called the mind of man, it's liable to waver me all over the place with its hostilities and fears and griefs and pains and dramas and traumas. But if I'm on track and hold fast to Rachma, then that willed action is going to begin a chain of events that's going to cause my mind to use only perceptual memory that is also keyed to love. And my instructions are going to be the highest and best my mind can possibly give me to complete the goal that I'm moving toward. And if there's error in my mind, then my mind is going to signal me with some form of hostility or fear that I then know that I'm going to need to forgive or remove to get that out of the way, so that the willed action comes through and is supported on every level all the way into behavior. And so what is life designed to do? As I said, when you teach, you're going to attract the people who are going to show you what it is you need to work through. And, you know, it's life's purpose is to kick us in limitation, to show what we're holding on to. To me, that's one of the beauties of teaching this work, is that you get to look time after time after time through the behavior prompts that show up in your mind, whether there's anything based in hostility or fear. Those who are not willing to do their work will take their hostility and fear-based perceptions, usually project them into their brain's image of whoever they're interacting with, and blame them. You know, you're the problem in my life. Now I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. Whereas one who's doing their work, gee, thanks for showing me that part of me that held that fear or that hostility. Now I've breathed and I've worked through, I've forgiven that, and I'm ready to go at a whole new level of clarity.
Well, I definitely accept that. and am beginning to experience that very thing, that I'm being shown and challenged in a way to look again within myself to see what needs to be cleaned up. So it's definitely important. If I may,
and then you find yourself knowing things you didn't know you even knew, right?
Well,
those things that come
from
being.
Not even knowing how I know it.
Yep, exactly.
Which is fine.
Like, oh, where did that come from?
Figure it out. Yeah. real quick, I have one more quick question. How and when do you or would you ever determine to, how do I say this, let a group or release a group to go form on its own guidance and leadership, you know, that sort of thing, so they're not dependent upon you. So in this case, I'm hoping through this group to move forward on their own and continue working and meeting together and or sharing the work if they feel led to do that, so that I can get another group of 4, 5, 6 people out of the larger group and work with them for 4, 5, 6 weeks. How would you go about releasing or encouraging that move to be less dependent on me and more trusting of their own internal guidance?
My take would be that that's going to be kind of a spontaneous thing that's just going to happen. Like, I know that there are many, many people around the country and around the world that are using these teachings. And, you know, I mean, I'll run into people. I talked to someone a week or so ago that something occurred. It was actually a Facebook post that they clicked on. And I hadn't talked to them in probably, a year and a half or so, and picked up the phone just to say hello. And they're like, our group's still going on. We've gotten and mentioned several people that had connected intensives, and they meet. They're still meeting once a week. I found that that's kind of happened spontaneously, and that you might find, you know, if you start another group that you're going to work with of a half dozen people or so, that some of the people from the group you're sort of cycling into completion with may want to stay around to just be with the modeling that you offer them. You know, it's kind of what this radio show is about. That, and I certainly hope that we can be a resource with you as you're working with people to come in and ask any question possible. And, you know, the fact that you're interacting with people the way you are means you're going to come up with questions I never thought of. And so it would be appreciated if you bring them to the show. One, if you have some original answers to share, to offer. It's like, wow, I never thought of it that way. Or if there are questions that, gee, I'm not sure where to go with this, by bringing that to the show, we've now got an archive for anybody in the world. You know, the fact that we have this platform is, I'm so appreciative of Blog Talk Radio, that we have this platform that anybody in the world that has access to the Internet can be part of this conversation. And, you know, we've got people that have been part of the conversation for 11 years and continue with it. And I've found, you know, if you look at the first, you know, my book was originally published in, I think it was 94, 95. So it's better than 25 years ago. And you'll see, and I've been thinking, if I rewrite the book, how would I go about establishing the next level of this? But if you look, there are something like 400 or 500 names in the front of the book that were literally people I was working with who all made contributions to me getting to be able to write that book. And the rewrite of it, I probably got to sit down and put together another 500 names, and I don't know if I've got the energy to do that or the focus with everything else going on in our world. Okay. To do that, that's one of the things that kind of held me back from doing a rewrite, is I really want to acknowledge all those people, and gee, how am I going to do that? But everybody's going to make a contribution, even if it's a question they ask that just open a whole different part of your mind that you never thought of taking this into. And, you know, that's been one of the gifts of getting to interact with so many people over the years with this.
Well, maybe I could suggest to overcome that reluctance is cancel that goal, Michael, about needing to acknowledge everybody and move forward if there's no legal problem with that.
No, there's no legal problem.
Do a blanket, thank you.
Yes.
I just wanted to call in and say hi, and that I have enjoyed so far reconnecting with the work, and we'll find ways to do this. And right now, I've got a real good group I'm working with, and may well take on a second. I have to see, and I'm in communication with them. So.
Cool. Well. Please, you know, any refinements that come that you want to share, you know, major insights you're getting that you haven't heard, you know, that come personally, it'd be awesome to call into the show and share it. And again, any question that arises, the smallest or the largest, we're here to open the conversation so that anybody who chooses to can have access to the refinements of this work. And, you know, as you say, it's the conversation in the book club, yeah, it's actually, after 25 years, it's actually, you know, why is this happening to me again, 7.0? There have been so many, you know, levels of integration, understanding. And I know personally for me, you know, I've been developing this work for a little better than 50 years, and specifically with the Aramaic for 42 or 43 now. And for me, the most important pieces of work that I've done have happened in the last 2 or 3 years. The most important insights, the deepest levels. And as far as I can tell, I still haven't really scratched the surface.
Well, I appreciate that as well. I guess, though, that for me, it's being able to scratch the surface on a slightly higher plane. I mean, you know, step, I'll say. And for you, it's much the same way. As you gain it, as you grow in consciousness and expand, you know, your knowing will increase as well. So your clarity and everything. So,
yeah. It's
anyway,
an exciting process.
I would, you know,
I mean, there's nothing more exciting in the world than this to me.
I will say to you this, though, that recently as I moved back into this, and just before I got into listening to the book club and contacting Yinka, and then you through her to you to get, you know, the okay to do this, I found a great amount of experiential guidance. I mean, just experiencing the Enlightenment book, going through, and you have said this before, going through the material in the Enlightenment book and then doing my own interpretations of scripture based on where I am personally in this has really been helpful. And I'm not going to say that there are things that you don't already know yourself, but I am discovering for myself through my own efforts, which is very rewarding for me. It's my way of doing Yeshua's protocol, I think is what you used to call that section in the book. But I've been thoroughly enjoying it, and I hope that you'll recommend to everybody to get a copy, get access to the Enlightenment book, and take a little dive in it, especially everybody that's been through your courses, your classes. It's definitely a very wonderful catalytic piece of writing.
It's endless. And, you know, the brain cells you resonate for me with that is I actually had started another book back probably 2 years before I met Jeannie. When Jeannie and I first met, our first conversations were about the book that eventually if I ever complete it, it's going to be titled The End of Suffering, Resurrecting the Original Aramaic Yeshua the Christ. And its initial title were The 10 Most Important Words Ever Spoken. In that place where they ask Yeshua what's most important and he gives them the answer, Rachma, he finishes that conversation up by saying, for upon this hangs the law and all its prophets.
Right. Right. I mean,
and
to me, yeah.
To me, that having that gateway open means I can get to read that text, the law and the prophets, and understand it from a level of being rather than filtering it through my mind and the content of my mind, which is means I'm reading my own book. There was an interesting line, if you've ever seen the film, let's see, what was the title of it? The Accountant with Ben Affleck.
Yes.
It's a pretty violent movie. But if you remember the song at the end of it, there's a song that a songwriter wrote, and the line in it was, you cannot read a book that you haven't written.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to me, that for upon this hangs the law and all the prophets, that it just, I mean, it, who knows what you and I still don't have a clue of that he was teaching, that when we've got the brain cells and we're ready, we're going to go, oh my God, look at that. And
well, I think,
you know,
there's, that's the magic, not the hocus pocus, but that's the,
yes,
the inspiring part of using active present love to launch into a worksheet, into the forgiveness process from that place of safety, of wholeness, of clarity. And that's really the magic of the worksheet. That is, if you don't have that step in place where you are indeed active present love, the worksheet is really going to be a struggle.
Yeah, it's what he put together is just so genius. It's mind-boggling.
Well,
quite literally.
Michael, I appreciate your time and Jeannie's time. Hi, Jeannie, by the way.
Good to hear you.
I appreciate your time, and I'm sure there's others that may have some questions and worksheet stuff, so I will step back and listen to the rest of it.
Awesome, friend. And if you have any thoughts, with the work, you've shared in the past some of the work you've done around working with the Kaboris, I'd be appreciative if you'd drop me those notes too that may enhance what we do with that next as well. So that would be cool.
All right. No problemo.
All right. Sweet. Well, have a blessed one.
I appreciate it, and same to you, sir, and Jeannie, to you as well, dear. So.
Thank you.
And congratulations on that new grandbaby. Ours just had her first day at school today. She's 4, and so she's going a half a day to school. And her parents both took the day off work so they could take her to school and pick her up from school. And we're hoping they're going to come and join us for dinner tonight so we get to hear firsthand as she explains to Mom and Dad what her first day at school was like. It's just, they took some pictures and just, those awesome, sweet faces of those little ones. It's just amazingly delightful. So, all right. Well, Miss Jeannie, thank you again. Grady, look forward to our next conversation. Ms. Jean, do we have anybody else in the phone queue? It looks like we're down to about 17 minutes or so. Anybody with a
minutes.
Hand up? 16
we
minutes.
Do not
All
have,
right.
Yeah. We do not have a hand up. I, however, have been getting a couple of texts and some comments in the chat room. And one of the comments says, instead of doing a rewrite of the book you've already got, just write a book number 2 that is able to show how the things that you want to share has developed from where you are now with your work. And then another one says, cancel the goal to acknowledge scads of people. We want the book.
Okay, I got it. And I'll still do the acknowledgement of those people. Yes, I've let go of that stress, but it'll still be there. It'll have to be.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts there?
The only other thing is I thought of sharing. Let me get back over here and open it up. It's really weird how cyberspace does things. But I had gotten a message on my calendar that it was a person's birthday, coming up day after tomorrow, and it's like, who is this person? And I asked Michael if he knew him, and he didn't know him, and I got to looking, and actually it's somebody who just placed an order back in 2009. So now I don't know how he got on my calendar that it was his birthday by placing an order, but anyway. So we sent him a link that Michael's been writing on an article, The Complete Joy Prescription. And once he finishes that, then I'll have it in the next newsletter. But we sent him the what he's got written so far. Excuse me. And I said, you ordered an audio back in 2009, and for some reason, I got a notice that your birthday's coming up. Cyberspace does some weird things sometimes. But anyway, Michael said to send you the following and wish you a happy birthday greeting. Apologies.
Do you need some water, sweetie?
He wrote back. Yeah. Hold on, hang on half a second. He wrote back and he said,
I'd love to help, but you need to
my other computer just started talking to me out of the blue, speaking of cyberspace. So he wrote back and he says, hi, Jeannie. Thank you so much for your kind wishes and the gift. Interesting enough, I have been drawn back to your and Michael's work again recently and have again been greatly enriched by it. The hard copy of my book is sitting on the dresser right next to me as I type this. It's always such a blessing to find other people who so richly embrace the path of true forgiveness. Have a great day and thanks once again. Now I wrote him again, and it's like, oh, well, since we have talked, you know, we've done the radio show. That started in 2011, and we also have the app. So we didn't have either of those things back when he had placed an order with us. So I sent him that information so that that might give him another tool in his toolbox. And somebody, Yink is actually in the chat room, and she said, if you decide to write a book, I will definitely buy it. anyway, so yeah, what you were telling Grady about, sometimes, you know, people get away from it and then they come back and, you know, it's just really, you know, not coincidental. There's no coincidence, but the universe just popped this guy back into our lives and he had already started doing the work again, so... that's all just pretty cool how that works out.
Well, the title will probably be Why Is This Happening to Me Again, too. I'm just not sure whether it's going to be T-O-O or T-W-O.
So we have 10 minutes. Do you have a question? Press 1. We have a lot of people on the switchboard today and several people in the chat room. So let us hear your comments or questions. It's good to
hear. And I would love to hear. Yeah, I'd love to hear from anyone who had any comments on the Aramaicisms. You know, that that word is a word that I coined to represent our efforts to get back to the original first century meanings of the words of Yeshua and to be able to hear them through accurate brain cells. And out of that thought came the conversation with Dale Allen Hoffman. And we were traveling, and Dale lives in Asheville, and we were presenting Asheville, so we set up and did a four-hour video presentation where we included board work and all. And then Jeannie went through the work of turning that video into an MP4 and then taking the MP3 audio track off of it so that she could set it up to do the four days of the radio show. So that's also available in a video track on our website. You can purchase either a DVD of it, or there's a streaming service that you can purchase a permanent link to. And of course, it's always there in the archives. All the I think, what did you end up having to do? Cut off maybe 3 minutes or so. So the whole 4-hour workshop
right.
is there. Yeah. So, but if you had any particular insights as you listen to last week's show, I'd love to hear it. I'd love to hear how that block of information impacted you. And if you're listening to the show on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, then if you dial into the show directly, the call-in number is 563 1-800-999-3581. If you call in directly, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push 1, that raises a hand in the control panel, and we'll be having a conversation. So what's on your mind? How can we support you? Anything to share from last week's presentations? And thank you for giving us the space to just do a full, pure week of vacation. It was just, you know, we were on the beach every day. We had perfect weather. When we were driving there, the weather program showed that it was going to rain every day. It's like, oh, God, we're going to Virginia Beach to be on the beach, and it's going to rain every day. Well, it ended up, I think, actually raining one day, but otherwise the weather was just awesome. We had a little bit of cloud here and there, but mostly sunshine. We got out there, we're both kind of looking brown as berries, and it was just a really sweet, sweet week.
Have a question in the chat room.
Yes.
Did Dale Allen Hoffman help you to fine-tune anything that you now teach? I know he also worked with Rocco Errico, and he learned about the Aramaic culture that is still practiced today. Rocco is from that culture, as you know.
Well, actually, a few little things that are just off a little bit. Rocco is Italian. Rocco is not Middle Eastern. Rocco was a protege of a man named George Lamsa, who wrote what's called the Lamsa Bible and several books, Lights on the Gospel, More Light on the Gospel, Old Testament Light. George Lamsa was the one who was actually from the Middle East and spoke Aramaic as his native language. Rocco worked with George, and Rocco was my first introduction to the Aramaic language, and then I later learned or met Dan McDougall and began to work with the Kabouris manuscript. And actually, Dale, he tells a story about when he first heard me speak, or actually some friends in Florida had invited him to come and hear me speak, and he actually throws out a funny line. He says, when they said he teaches the Aramaic, and he says, oh, the Aramaic, is that kind of like the Macarena? What's that? And so we actually introduced Dale to the Aramaic language back, oh, geez, I don't even know how many years ago he came to Heartland. He was a young man and came and did an intensive, and that then became a passion for him and a life path for him to go to the Aramaic. So Dale actually picked up and started to work with and study, became much more engaged in the Aramaic than I. I had already found my path in the Aramaic forgiveness process and introduced Dale to that. And he went on to become more engaged in the actual speaking, reading, and writing the language and such, which has not been my path at all. So we've offered refinements to each other over the years since Dale became engaged in that Aramaic study. Actually, Dale was involved for, I'm not even sure now, maybe it was 3 or 4 years, and then things got busy in his world and kind of went in a different direction. And I contacted Dale, not having heard from him for a while, and, you know, ended up in a conversation. And that was kind of, as I understand it, his inspiration for going back and going even deeper, diving even deeper into the Aramaic. And so that presentation, Aramaicisms, was a result of that second round of contact with Dale and him going back. And, you know, it's now his livelihood, his full-time occupation is working with the Aramaic. So yes, Dale has offered me refinements, and kind of just created mutual support as time has unfolded. So, and Rocco, as far as I know, he's still in Atlanta. Rocco used to have a center out in California. I had a center in South Florida, and I would invite Rocco in and set up events, and Rocco would come and speak at my center. And Rocco had his place in California, and he would invite me out to speak and to work and then with him. And so there's been a lot of synergy around that Aramaic understanding. And then, of course, the big opening for me was that I was teaching actually at Unity in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and the minister and his wife went to a course they'd heard about around the Aramaic, and it was called Emotional Maturity Instruction. Dan McDougald was an attorney in Atlanta, ultimately in Albany, Georgia, and he had actually on the guidance of British intelligence what he was learning into the prisons to try to create a way to cut recidivism and test out the Aramaic principles. And this minister and his wife went to Dan's course, and when I heard it, you know, I'd already been introduced by Rocco, and then the minister and his wife from Unity in Fort Lauderdale introduced me to emotional maturity instruction, and Dan came to Fort Lauderdale. We sat and had lunch. I remember that conversation very well. And that became a whole path that lasted for a long time with Dan and I working together and ultimately becoming the director of the Kabor's Manuscript Foundation in order to carry on this work with the Aramaic. So that's kind of a little bit of history of how it's unfolded. That history is in the Enlightenment book, which if you go to whyagain.org, our website, and look at the products page, you'll see the Enlightenment book. It's $25, and I think there's $5 shipping or $6, whatever that is. And it's what we've published so far from the Kabor's manuscript. It has some select passages from the New Testament. It has a story of how the manuscript was found. It was called the Kabor's manuscript because it was found in the Kabor River in Turkey. And so there's a story about how the manuscript was found. There were some select passages from the New Testament. And the key words are left in Aramaic in brackets in the book Brady was talking about. And then in the back of the book, there's a dictionary where all those key words are listed. So you can sit and do your own translation, get your own sense of what the meaning is going to be for that passage to you. You know, when you realize, you go back and you listen to the scriptures and talks about the Creator talking to us, and that it's done in allegory. And that means there's nothing literal about it, that it's allegorical. And you hear Yeshua saying, he spoke not to them except in parables. That's a parable. In Aramaic, a parable is something that is a parallel meaning. When someone was crashing against something they were blocked in their own minds with, Yeshua would lay down a parable, a parallel meaning, which would bypass the resistance in the intellectual brain, the left brain, and would open the space for people to understand from the right brain, which then brings a whole new meaning. And so when you open that right brain, you've now stepped into doing your work, taking things to a whole different place and living on a whole different level. So that's a little bit of that. And so if you want to order that book, you can go to our website and we'll get it off to you. And it's a delight to spend time with you. Invite a friend and have the best year yet of your eternal life. Thank you for joining us. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.